Good morning. My message this morning is entitled Non-Passive Pacifism. So last week, we talked about the spiritual importance of resistance in helping the moral arc of the universe bend towards justice. Today, I'd like to move our conversation from the spiritual importance of resistance to the impact of active nonviolent resistance. And after yesterday's mass shootings in El Paso, Texas, earlier this morning, Dayton, Ohio, and as well as shootings earlier this week in Gilroy, California, and South Haven, California, Mississippi, it couldn't be more important. It couldn't be more important in terms of protesting for better gun control laws, as well as the importance of doing so through nonviolent action. It's far too easy to believe that impacting positive change, impacting a move toward justice through active nonviolent resistance is just pipe dream. That is, it is a lovely concept that's mostly ineffective when placed within the context of modern realities of powers and dominance. The reality is, though, nothing could be further from the truth. The reality is that active, nonviolent resistance doesn't capture the vast majority of the public's attention enough to sell ads and commercials. So the majority of big media groups ignore it or underreport it. We can simply look at the massively underreported Moral Monday gatherings that started here in North Carolina to see the reality of that fact. And it may be that another reality is that that kind of change making, that kind of peace making, this active nonviolent resistance is such a threat to the industrial war machine and to those who leverage fear and violence and hate in order to continue to propagate their positions of power. It may be that this nonviolent bending of the moral arc of the universe is such a threat to them that they do everything within their power to prevent the mass distribution of reports that point to how effective nonviolent resistance really is. As Mahatma Gandhi reminds us, nonviolence is the greatest force at the disposal of mankind. It's mightier than the mightiest weapon of destruction devised by any of the ingenuity of man. So to begin to get at why I, as a Christian minister, value active, nonviolent resistance so much, I'd like to look at the teachings from Jesus that was the most quoted verse in the first 400 years of Christianity. And I'd like to introduce it, though, with a quote from one of my personal heroes, Dr. Martin Luther King. Dr. King, one of the greatest leaders in nonviolent resistance, gave this very simple core understanding of nonviolence. At the center of nonviolence stands the principle of love. Now, the most quoted verse in the early church was this: "But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who harass you so that you will be acting as children of your Father who is in heaven. He makes the sun rise, and both the evil and the good he sends rain on both the righteous and unrighteous." Let's consider that for just a moment. For the first 400 years of Christianity, 400 years, the years that most closely followed immediately after the teachings of Jesus, the most important verses in Christianity were ones that said, love your enemies, pray for those who harass you, God treats us all equally, and so should you. Once again, from Dr. King, at the center of nonviolence stands the principle of love. For the first 350 to 400 years, Christianity stood firmly on the side of love, the side of nonviolence. For me, though, that begs the question, what changed? Our history since that point certainly includes many acts of violence, frequently in the name of religion. Well, to put it quite simply, the Roman government started giving Christianity preferential treatment. And quickly, Christianity went from being a persecuted group by the government to being protected by the government. And on a side note, let me say right now, anytime that a religion and a government get together like we're seeing in the U.S., it is always, always a very dangerous thing. Now, getting back to early Christianity, theologian Walter Wink has this to say about Christianity's move from being prosecuted by the powers that be to being protected by them. He says, "Once a religion attains sufficient power in a society that the state looks for its support, that religion must also, of necessity, join the repression of the state's enemy." And he goes on to say about early Christianity's relationship with the Roman government, "For a faith that lived from its critique of domination and its vision of a nonviolent social order, the shift was catastrophic, for it could only mean embracing and rationalizing oppression." The parallels with modern politics and Christianity in the U.S. should leave us all shaking in our boots. Politicians are co-opting Christianity and using it as a rallying point for selling their modern-day emotional equivalent of snake oil, trying to convince people that the fear, the hate, the violence is good for what ails you. And they claim to be doing it on the foundation of Christianity. Yet the teachings of Jesus, in the most quoted Bible verse in early Christianity, tells us, love your enemy. Pray for those who persecute you. I'm left with the feeling that over the last 1,500 years or so, we've drifted away from a part of our identity that was once foundational to our understanding of who we are and who Jesus taught us to be. Of course, the instinctive response is to say that that's just a reality of the modern day world, that it's just the reality of our times that nonviolent responses do not work. But the actual reality is that the thought process that says fear, hate, and violence bring about peace are the real myth. Or as Dr. King put it, hate begets hate. Violence begets violence. Toughness begets a greater toughness. We must meet the forces of hate with the power of love. Or as Gandhi put it, "I object to violence because when it appears to do good, the good is only temporary. The evil it does is permanent." You see, it turns out that active nonviolent resistance changes things all the time. In his publication called Jesus' Third Way, Walter Wink reminds us that in 1989, there were 13 nations that underwent nonviolent revolutions. All of them successful except for one. That one was in China. And that year alone, 1.7 billion people were engaged in national nonviolent revolutions. That's a third of all of humanity were involved in nonviolent revolutions. If you throw in all the other nonviolent revolutions in all the other nations just during the 20th century, you get an astonishing figure of 3.34 billion people involved in nonviolent revolutions. That's just two-thirds of the human race at that point. No one can ever say again that nonviolence doesn't work. It has been working like crazy. The reality is that nonviolent resistance is actually part of the founding of the U.S. That, doesn't mean that there wasn't horrific violence also in its founding. It just means that at least part of the U.S. is actually built on the foundation of nonviolence. You see, the American colonists initiated three major nonviolent resistance campaigns against the British. Against the Stamp Acts of 1765, the Townshend Acts of 1767, and the Coercive Acts of 1774. And collectively, that played a major role in the independence for the nine colonies by 1775. See, the reality is that there are example after example of this kind of resistance working. Nonviolent demonstrations led to the passage and ramifications of the constitutional amendment guaranteeing women the right to vote. Using a variety of nonviolent methods, including boycotts, economic boycotts, massive demonstrations, marches, sit-ins, and freedom rides, the U.S. Civil Rights Movement won passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Apartheid in South America was brought down in 1990 through nonviolent protest and mass resistance. More recently, we saw the rise of Arab Spring, not the nonviolent movement in the Middle East. And most recently, we've seen leadership change in Puerto Rico as a result of non-passive protests. For Jesus, for Gandhi, for Dr. King, for 3.4 billion people who participated in nonviolent resistance in the 20th century, pacifism isn't, well, it's not passive. It's active and creative and frequently uses systems of domination against themselves. Those of us who wish to follow the teachings of Jesus should look to the early church and their nonviolent practices, and then spend some more time understanding how this works, then ultimately replicating it in our own lives. So, let us march on, bending the arc of the universe towards justice. It'll take the sweat of our brow, the creativity of our minds, and the love of our souls if we hope to sort out a nonviolent way forward. But we must never lose sight of the reality that nonviolence is the only way forward. Are there those who have thoughts about today's topic that they want to share? Now would be the time.
I have an app on my phone that's for the most passive people in here. It's called Five Calls, and you can get it most anywhere. And it gives you all the information and links you immediately to all of your representatives, senators, etc. And all you have to do is work the app. And you can leave a message. You don't have to know the phone number. It's on there. You can leave a message, or you can talk to the people at those offices. There's kind of no excuse. So I don't know who it is, or I don't know their phone number. I don't know their email address. It's all in Five Calls.
Thank you for that. Absolutely handy.